Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Our host, Oscar Endermo, will together with guests share proven, tested strategies for improving your life and business. At the end of each episode, you will learn how you can use technology to implement those strategies into your daily life. We want to help you bridge the gap from inspiration to implementation.
I am rarely speechless. Scott Pelley, CBS 60 Minutes. We think this is as important as when the internet came. Mats Lindgren, Kairos Future. This is going to impact every product across every company. CEO of Alphabet and Google. This is similar as Gutenberg Press or the radio. Darren Hardy, founder of Success Magazine. AI and ChatGPT changes everything. This is a tool that you have to master. It's profound for those that use it and will be destructive for those that don't, because using this tool will give you so much advantage. In the previous episode of this podcast, I spoke to Eddie Obang, and he shared the concept after midnight. And this is this concept that we live in a world that is changing faster than our ability to learn. And this is how it is a little bit now at the moment with AI. I try to keep update about this development, but it's really, really moving fast. However, the tool that we are going to talk about today, ChatGPT, that is a tool that I use personally every day and is helping me with everything I do, basically. And this is a tool that I truly believe that we need to master if we want to future-proof ourselves. And because of this, I reached out to Fredrik Löfgren, and he is a robot developer and an AI expert. Fredrik works daily with robotics and has several medals in competing in robotics, both from the World Cup and the Olympics. So we talk about robots, but we also talk about AI and ChatGPT. If you haven't played with ChatGPT, this episode has the potential to change your life. So listen, learn, start a ChatGPT account on OpenAI, and start playing with it. Then share this episode with a friend, and then after you can send a thank you note to Fredrik and I for introducing you to this amazing tool that has so much potential to make the world better if you use it the right way. I'm also happy to announce that I've released my second book. My first book, The Smartphone Coaching System, was released on Kindle in 2012. That book took maybe a year, a little bit more than a year to write, and a lot of headaches. It was a very heavy process for me because I'm fast. I like to do fast, and this, you know, detailed stuff. Yeah, it was very, very hard work for me to write that book. This new book took me about 2 months to write, and it was a lovely process. Why? Because I co-authored it with ChatGPT. I worked together with ChatGPT as a collaborative partner, and ChatGPT turned out to be an amazing partner, both for coming up with content, brainstorming ideas, being the editor, and many different things. So in this book, it's about how you can future-proof yourself in a rapidly changing world. And first it will be launched as a digital book on Kindle, and maybe later I will also release a print version. But first it's on Kindle, and the link, if you want to buy the book, is on the show notes to this episode. So go to Amazon and buy the book. It's less than a cup of coffee in Starbucks, actually. But for now, enjoy this episode with Fredrik and I. Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And I started with this question for a couple of years now, that pretend that you and me are in a building in Dubai, in a skybar. We're in the lift. We're going up in the lift to a skybar. So this is the third guy in the lift, and he asks, so Fredrik, what do you do? What would you tell him?
I do robotics and AI. I have several businesses and companies, and I'm also doing research in the field of AI. Yeah. So creating the future of the society.
2023, I believe that is really a hot industry to be in, a hot area to be in. So your interest for robotics and robots, where does that come from?
It started really early. I was 7 years old when I got a programmable Lego kit. So I always have loved to create stuff, to build different houses in my garden, etc. But then when I got this programmable Lego kit, I was able to give life to my different Lego cars and other application. And that was a fantastic feeling that I could write some small computer code and my truck or my car started to move itself without me being able or without me directly controlling it.
Okay. I wonder how many brilliant engineers started with playing with Lego.
Yeah, several hundreds, I would say, yeah, maybe thousands.
Yeah. I remember my brother, he studied at KTH in Stockholm, and I think one of the first days they had everyone a gathering with everyone, and one of the teachers said, how many of you played with Lego as a kid?
Everyone. And
almost all of the engineers raised their hands, or future engineers. So, what was the first kind of robot that you created?
I don't remember the actual first one, but it was some kind of vehicle moving around in my room, and then I started to explore the rest of the house, like following a line from my room to the kitchen, and in the kitchen the vehicle started to beeping and making sounds, and my mother was asking, what is this, what is the sound? And seeing this vehicle with a paper saying, place the cookies and I will be quiet, so she take the container of cookies, placed it on the vehicle, and the vehicle became quiet and changed the direction back to my room. So whenever I wanted my cookies, I could start this vehicle bringing me, carrying the cookies for me. But my mother understood that regardless of what she placed on this vehicle, it will be quiet. So then she put the homeworks and other stuff, the task for me to do, and I got no cookie delivery. Instead, the homework was delivered.
Good mama.
Yeah.
So you studied at Linköping University, or
yes.
Was that related to robotics, or what did you study?
I actually studied applied physics, but. Yeah, applied physics. Robotics is applied physics. So yes, but I did more robotic stuff in my free time. I was one of the founders of a robotics association at the university. So at daytime, I studied math, electrodynamics, and other courses, more boring courses. And in the nights, I was doing robotics with my friends.
Okay, excellent. I saw on your website that you won a couple of medals in both, I think, the Olympics and the World Championships in robotics. So how do you compete?
I have always loved to compete. I was also like a sporty person, but I thought that I wasn't so good in that. But then I found out that you can compete in mental or more mind games intelligence sports. So I was already in high school competing with robots, and the rule sets differ from each competition. But it can be, for example, a robot helping out in an apartment. You can ask the robot different questions and the robot should carry it out. Like, for example, I can ask the robot, where is my glasses? And the robot will try to find your glasses and bring them to you. So different task list. I have been in cooking competitions for robots where the robot prepare a meal. For example, it can cook spaghetti or soup or whatever you want to have. Mm-hmm. I have been in rescue competitions where the robot is searching for victims after an earthquake or other disasters, and the robot should be able to find people who is screaming or emitting heat or waving, motion detection, etc. So there are a lot of different competitions, and I think I have been part of most of them. Uh-huh. I have even being the captain of the Swedish national team in soccer, but not the human team, the robot team. So we have been in Germany, Japan, China, competing in robot soccer. And there they have a team of 5 people in our team, and the opponent is also 5. And we are standing as humans watching this game, and we don't control the robot. The robot's using cameras, ears, speak with each other and have a team play. Communicating during the game, and the goal is to, in now it's 27 years, beat the humans.
Okay.
So in 2050 they will beat the humans. That is the goal, and I think that's totally possible.
Yeah. That was my next question. When they will win? So 2050. Okay, interesting.
I think it can happen even before that.
Because I think
the development
too.
Is so rapid.
Yeah, exactly. But is it like is it 11 robots or is it one robot? Like I seen like one on one or
no? They are five against five, but there are different
robots
leagues.
As well.
Yeah. So five robots against five robots, but there are different leagues. So you can have one-on-one and you can have larger teams as well. Mm. We are competing in a standard platform league. So everyone has the same robot. They are approximately 60 centimeters high and they have different roles. So we have one attacker and one goalkeeper, etc. And they also today use some superhuman sensors like ultrasonic sensors. They have Wi-Fi, but in 2050 they will have the same physical capabilities as a human. Okay. But the goal is that they have a better team play.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Is it a spectacle, like a lot of people watching this, or is it
depend on which country hosts the championship? But when we was in China, I think it was 50 or 60,000 in the audience.
Oh,
so
wow.
Then it's really big and there are big arenas. And during the same umbrella competition, there are soccer, the football or the rescue and at home. So all these competitions are under the same umbrella.
Okay, interesting. So we know in the World Cup in soccer or football that the best teams, you know, Germany, Brazil, there's a couple of teams that always win and Sweden never makes it all the way through, you know.
Exactly.
So what are the like top three when it comes to robotic soccer? Or what is it called?
It's called robot soccer.
Robot soccer, yeah. So what are the top three nations?
Japan, of course. They are always keen in this robotics field.
Yeah.
We also have the States, because they have a lot of money on this. China is usually a good country. Australia as well. Maybe that's a surprise. Australia is good in soccer. And in Europe, I would say Germany.
Uh-huh. And Sweden?
No, not so good. Maybe like the human. We are part of the championship, but we are not in the
all
end
the
game.
Okay. So we need to invest more in this.
Yes.
So. Yeah, no, it's interesting. So your company Dyno Robotics. What are some examples of robots that you have built or that you are used? Is it a consultancy or do you actually build the robots as well?
So for now we are more a consultancy company, but we want to move more and more to products and we are reusing a lot of software packages. So we have internal products that we are reusing and we are doing wide variety of robots like flying drones we have done for Saab. We have done underwater robots dredging seas and dredging canals. We have done indoor navigation robots for museums, like guiding robots that can guide in a museum. We have done outdoor navigation for last mile delivery, like similar to Foodora, but using robots instead of bicycles. Mm. And we have done a lot of research projects as well. So our main clients are research and development departments of Ericsson or Toyota or Scania. So we are helping them with their innovation and trying to build robots for proof of concepts for these larger clients. But we are also working with startups. So we have a startup doing indoor farming of saffron.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having the saffron farmed in Afghanistan or Iran, we can do it in Sweden and we do it indoor so we can control the climate as well. So we have a winter room, a summer room, spring and fall, and we can speed up the farming season. So instead of having one farming season a year, we can have three or maybe four farming seasons. And there we have robots picking this saffron. And another startup we are helping with picking golf balls at the driving range. So where they are practicing shooting golf balls, we have robots collecting this and bring them back, wash them, and then they can just press a button and they will get their basket with more new golf balls. So it's a circular system there.
Okay, super cool. Yeah, now I'm friends with Andreas Williamson, which is one of the guys behind You Skorda, which is an indoor farm in I think outside Skövde, that does they do, I believe, kale now.
Exactly. Indoor. Yeah, but saffron, you have higher margins there.
Interesting. Yeah, that's smart. I think weed is the best margin.
Yeah. But that's the secret. We don't say that officially.
Exactly. Yeah. So, no, but saffron, that's really interesting, actually. So, but if you take the, for example, the golf ball robots, like, so how is the process with Dyna Robotics with this? Because you don't manufacture, like, you don't have, like, how do you work together?
So for some clients, we actually have a workshop and we have weldering and milling machines here at the office as well. So I have some hardware engineers as well, but the main focus is on the software. And in particular with this golf ball company, they are called Relox Robotics. We are helping them with the software. So we are working in a team. They have their own software engineers and we have stand-ups together and we assign each engineer their task, what they should do and what they should focus on. Is it diagnostics or navigation or identification of golf balls or some other task? And then we are working in 2-week sprints. And then we're planning the next sprint and so on. So we are working together with them, but they have their hardware engineers and they are doing the hardware for that robot.
Okay. Yeah. So for the listeners, I recommend you to go to Dyna Robotics website to check this out. Some, I think, more information about the different cool projects that you've been involved in. So what do you think about Optimus and the Elon Musk or Tesla's robot?
They have a long way to make that useful. It's cool on stage, it's cool to see, but it's the same as with Boston Dynamics. It works 1 out of 10 times or 1 out of 50 times, so it's not ready for mass production in several years, I would say. And mainly when you see these kind of robots, humanoid robots, they are cool, but in practical use, maybe so much, not so much yet. Most of the robots we produce have wheels and more like a vehicle. But since the society are built around the human body and we have handles in our height, we have steps that are made for human legs, I think it can be a good idea to, instead of changing the society and every infrastructure in the world, it's better that the robots change and be more similar as the humans. But maybe before we see such robots out on the streets 10 years, in the beginning of the 30s.
Yeah, yeah. So if you ask Elon Musk, he says 3 months, but if you ask someone else, it's 10 years.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
So of course, I want to talk about AI and ChatGPT, which is a really hot topic as we're recording this. But before we move on to that, like, what are some jobs that you think robots will replace in the near, like 2023, 2024? Like, these robots are like, you know, is it like self-service in fast, like McDonald's has a self-service restaurant?
So people saying replacing different jobs, but it's not like overnight this occupation will disappear. It's more like we do it more efficient and maybe we need less truck drivers or less fast food personnel. So it's not like a job will be totally erased or removed from the labor market. And we see that has already happened in the industry. Instead of having human labor welding cars, we have robots welding cars and the humans are supervising or programming these robots. And the same happens in fast food restaurants. Instead of having a lot of people taking the orders, you have these self-service machines, and instead the personnel can prepare the food, cook the food. So it's happening all the times and not today we erase all these jobs, but it's we see for example drivers, self-driving cars, self-driving trucks, forklifts, and not so much out on the normal roads. You can drive in certain, if you have certain permissions. So we have in Linköping here self-driving buses at the campus, and also in normal traffic they are out on normal roads. We have the same in Gothenburg, we have the same in Stockholm and so on, so you can get permission for that, but that is in smaller scale. I would say that drivers at a factory like forklifts, they will be replaced faster. We have these AGVs, autonomous guided vehicles, that will replace a lot of drivers in in-house or indoor. But we also see a lot of algorithms for detecting cancer or detecting different sicknesses, and you can give decision guidance. So it's more like pure software. We see the same in economics. We have robots trading stock trading. That was humans just 10 years ago. Today it's mainly robots that it's doing the affairs. We have with ChatGPT, a lot of communication, text writing, journalism. So it's happening in all these kind of fields. And I would say my own job as well as a programmer. I'm using AI every day, and all my employees is using AI all the time as well to help and to be more efficient. So I would say that we will have programmers 10 years in the future, maybe 20, 30 years in the future, but one programmer can produce more code. And that is a continuation from like the 60s, 70s. It took much longer time to produce a computer program in the 80s than today, because we have Python today, we have C in the 80s, and it's easier and faster to write Python program. And with AI, we will become even faster. So if I have 5 programmers, maybe in the future I only need 2. But the occupation of programming will still exist in 20 years.
The co-piloting. So let's move on to this. And some of these things that the robots will replace, like picking golf balls on a golf course, is maybe a okay summer job when you're 17, but it's not the dream job that someone wants. And even, you know, flipping burgers at McDonald's is something maybe you do as extra when you're a student, but it's not your dream career. So if a robot replaces that, I'm fine with that, you know.
But we AI... need to find new jobs that are the dream jobs. And what are the dream jobs? Maybe if you ask a kid today, it's to be an influencer. But we can't have more influencers or more creative persons like in the entertainment industry than its consumers. We need more consumers than producers in the entertainment industry. So everyone can't be, it's impossible that everyone can be a YouTuber, because you need more viewers than producers there. So the problem here is that we are removing some job, and we are also creating some job, but they are not matching up, I would say. We have a gap here, and that's the problem. How should we solve that problem? It's a problem for the society. Who are going to pay for these that will be unemployed?
So I used to divide the world into those to have access to internet and those that don't. And before, like, I think when I started talking about these things was like 2017, it was like 50% had access to internet, 50% didn't. Now it's going up. I think it's 65-70% maybe has access to internet. But now I like to divide the world into three parts: those that don't have access to internet, those have access to internet, and those that have access to ChatGPT and other AI tools and that can use them. Because for me, the last couple of months, I've used ChatGPT for everything, and it's a game changer. I 10x my productivity. I it's just mind blowing. So ChatGPT, being 2022, 3.5 version was released. And what is, for those that are like, oh, I played with ChatGPT, but it didn't give me a good answer, they, for me, obviously, they don't know how to prompt correctly. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to someone like that? And what happened with ChatGPT 3.5 and now 4? Because, yeah.
Yeah, it's of course needs you need to practice and you need maybe education there how to use these new tools. They are very, very powerful if you use them correctly, and you're saying you need to prompt it better. But I would say that it's not only about prompting it, it's also to use it in the correct ecosystem. Because if you ask ChatGPT 4 what year is it, it will not answer you correctly. Or what time is it, it will not answer the time correct. Yeah. Or if you ask it a math question like the area of this circle, you have this radius, it can't calculate that. But yeah, it's because it don't have a clock. Yeah. It don't have a calculator. A human, if you ask a human what time is it, it's hard for me to know. I can watch at the sun, and then I use the sun as a tool. So ChatGPT is one tool, but you need to connect it to other tools as well, yeah, to be able to unlock the full capability of it. Yeah, so you give ChatGPT more tools.
Yeah, as an example, I a couple of months ago, I was showing it to my friend Gunnar Ekman, and he's like a professor from Stockholm School of Economics. And I asked ChatGPT, please summarize Gunnar Ekman's doctor's thesis. And it says like, Gunnar Ekman's doctor's thesis was done in 1993. And here it was about this, it's about small talk, blah, blah, blah. So it summarized it. And I sent it to Gunnar. And Gunnar was like, oh, that's an excellent summary. However, it was not done in 1993. I started Handelshögskolan, Stockholm School of Economics, 93, but the thesis was done in 1999. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that ChatGPT just, you know, gave it to me without, made it up, you know, or probably found somewhere that that Gunnar started in Stockholm School of Economics, 93, you know. So if you don't, I think the prompter needs to have some kind of general knowledge and
So that will also become better and better over time. So for GPT 3.5, it's not so correct. 4 is better, and 5 will of course be even better. But something that you need to do there is provide the thesis, provide the source text. Mm-hmm. Instead of trusting the big neural network, which sometimes are right, sometimes hallucinating. If you give the raw feedback and ask it to summarize the raw text, then it's much better. And you can do that in several ways. One way is to have a vector database like they do for ScatGPT that have all the information about tax authorities here in Sweden, or PalmeGPT as well, where they loaded the algorithm with a vector database about the police investigation about the murder of Ulf Palme. So there they provide more background information, and then of course the answer will be more accurate.
Yesterday I sent my new book to an editor to format it a little bit, and I did it with ChatGPT as a co-author. Yeah, and I started with 3.5, but then I realized it's much better in 4, so I had to kind of like redo the process with 4. Yeah. So
do you give credits to GPT-4?
Exactly. Yeah, I actually put on the front page co-author ChatGPT.
You do. Yeah,
nice. And I put at the end like, thank you to my partner ChatGPT. It was really fun working with you. And it's been interesting. And I think I completed this book in like 1 month something, and I wrote another book in 2013, and that took like years for me to write.
It's
so amazing, you know.
As you say, you can get 10 times as fast with using these tools. So it will, as you say, be a extreme difference between the people who are using that and the people that aren't using that.
For you as a programmer, how helpful is it for you when you program?
I would say that I'm 3 times faster using it. So I can produce 3 times more code, but you need to be able to read the code and to check it for security leaks and some loopholes in the code and so on. So you need to be careful. It's a bit like reading the code of one of my students at the university. You can see some mistakes here and there, but it's faster for me to fix these mistakes than writing the bulk of all the code. And I also use it a lot for writing emails and writing applications. So searching for funding, for example, I can give ChatGPT or GPT-4 the call for funding, and then I give it my web page, or I give a summary of what I want to search money for, and then it writes the background and the KPIs and how to measure and evaluate and so on. But you always need to read through the text, of course.
So in your company, you said you encourage people to use this, like.
Yes, more or less, I force everyone to do it.
You force. So,
We are a small startup, so every advantage we can get is a good one.
I mean, for me, I'm a one man show at the moment and work with different partners and stuff. And for me, I could implement ChatGPT like this because I could just open it up and start playing with it. But if you're a large company or a medium sized company, how would you do it? Like from the like management team, would you write like a ChatGPT policy or
I think it can be good to have it, especially since and that's important to notice that ChatGPT saves what you write to it to be able to it's still a research project, so they want to improve it and they want to know what is people using it for. So you shouldn't write any company secrets or any sensitive information at all, personal information in ChatGPT. So what I do when I use it in my company is to use the API, because the API I pay for, and they, at least OpenAI, say that they don't save anything. So it's better to use the API or the playground instead of the open and the free ChatGPT. So that's very important. If a larger company or a digitalization manager say we should use ChatGPT, it might be a bad idea since their company information may leak to OpenAI.
So when you use the API, it's your data basically. You own the data.
Yes. At least they say so, but I trust them on that. I pay also for having access to the API.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, because that's one of the concerns sometimes when I speak to leaders about this. You know, like
So it's important if they write a policy, then it should be on the top line.
Yeah.
Don't use ChatGPT. Use the API instead, and use the raw model. And you also have more parameters. You can change, for example, one parameter is the temperature, and the temperature, in simple words, it decide how much it should make up answers, how much it should be answering I don't know versus just hallucinating some answer up. So you get more control of the result in the API.
Okay, but I mean, someone told me that, and this is my assumption as well, in any big company, those that use ChatGPT, they will not tell their managers. They will just use it to be three times more productive as a programmer. Because if they tell their manager, I mean, their risk of losing their job, basically, because then, like, why do we have 10 programmers? We only need 3 or 4, you know? So they're using ChatGPT in secret.
Might be, but I also think that if you tell the manager, then you can, the manager will see that you suddenly become three times more efficient as well. So that's something to be suspicious about, like from 1 week to another week, you produce a lot more code. But I think you need to trust your manager to keep your job. You are the smartest one at the place. Maybe someone else will, your colleague might lose their job if you are smart to use this new technology. And it's also important to notice that if you use it, it can be a security leak, and you need to be aware of that as a manager as well. So I think an open climate and that you can talk with your colleagues and your boss is important.
So I mean, I just listened to some interview with the CEO of Google, for example, saying that this will affect every job and every industry. But because some people think like, okay, this will affect content writers or like social media writers, because it's very easy to write social media posts. But what impact do you think it will have on, like, if you look at a company, like sales marketing is one, but then you have human resources, you have everything. Yes.
So it will affect white collar worker, the office workers. Of course, you can argue for fast food restaurant personnel will also be affected, but not directly. It's more indirect there. But everyone that is writing emails or writing articles or writing scripts or whatever, if you're working at the computer, you're using your keyboard, then you will be affected. But if you are a blue collar worker, maybe you are not affected by ChatGPT, but of course with robotics and other AI algorithms. So there we see a difference. In the past, we thought that it would be easier to replace blue-collar workers. But today we see the opposite. It's easier to replace a white-collar. And also white-collar have a higher salary. You are often not using your body, so it's just the software. We are using our brains, and if we have a software, it's easy to replicate that. We can do control C, control V, and we have two programmers. But to replace a human working in a fast food restaurant, you need to build an actual physical application, and that's often more expensive.
Interesting. So how is your grandfather doing?
My grandfather, you have heard that I'm recording him. So we have long discussions over phone, and sometimes we also meet in personal. But I record all my phone calls with him, and also some emails and so on. He is actually using emails still. He's 88 years old. But I want him to have an afterlife. So I record the calls, and I'm trying to create both a voice synthesizer that sounds like him. So then I can make him say whatever I want. But I want him to act and say stuff and tell stories that he usually do. So I also record the content, not only the audio and the voice, but also the content. And he tells about his life and what he did when he was a child, when he was in the military, and stories from his life. And this I will use to train an AI to act and talk like him. So, and he has given his permission for this as well. So in the future, when he in 5-10 years dies, I can have him in my pocket, and I can call him when I need advices.
So at the moment, you're just recording, you haven't started uploading it to the AI?
No, and you don't actually. I'm not planning to upload it to some cloud. It's more like I want it locally. It's more for me, or maybe my siblings and so on.
So you will not use ChatGPT or something like this?
No, not that. I do my own neural networks and my own software for that. And running it locally in GPU. I haven't started to train on this data set, but I have done similar things with the voice from Anders Tegnell and all press conferences of Anders Tegnell in Swedish TV. I have used to train a voice, and I can now make Anders Tegnell say whatever I want. And I have also practiced the content of my own chat logs from early 2000 in MSN, and I have all my chat logs saved from MSN and from Skype and from Facebook Messenger, so I can go back in time and having an AI write as Frederick did 10 years old? And how did Frederick write 15 years old, 20 years old, 25? So I have that saved for my own AI. So maybe I'm also, when I die, will be immortal.
So your kids and your grandkids can listen to your grandfather telling bedtime stories. Or,
Yeah, exactly. That's the plan.
No, it's interesting. I mean, if you take, like, I listen to Rogan from time to time when he has interesting guests, and there's so much, you know, out there from him. So, I mean, I can easily see Joe Rogan interviewing Socrates, Plato, Jesus, and Buddha in a podcast, and then just like have Joe Rogan interview these four historical figures for 2 hours and make it interesting and fun in Joe Rogan style, you know. Then generates the video, and then this is, I mean, when I play with these big things, I go between wow, super cool, and then wow, this is so freaking scary.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, similar. I think I'm optimistic. I think we can solve the challenges and the risks, but we need to be clever about this, and we need to think deeply about the risks. But I don't think we can stop the development as they wanted in this letter. I think if we stop, the bad development will continue, and the good will stop, and we will see that China, today we have a bit of a gap. We are before China in just this large language model AI, and if we pause the development half a year, maybe they will run before us. So we need to be aware of the risks. We should also have respect for people being afraid. But I'm optimistic, and I think in this kind of discussions you and me having today, and that this is more in the news, and the discussion is live now, and that's really, really good. And I think it's also important that it's not only engineers talking about this. We have economics, and we have researchers in society, etc., that also is talking about this.
I mean, the upside is enormous, but also the downside has
You know.
So of course I fed ChatGPT some information about you, and told ChatGPT about these interesting conversations that we were about to have, and asked ChatGPT for some good questions that I could ask to Frederick. And I think we covered most of them, but there was one question that ChatGPT thought about that I didn't think about. That is, let's see, he gave me 10 questions. Is it a he or a she?
That's also a good question. I think it depends on who is talking to it. And how you prompt it.
He asked, are there any specific technologies or things with AI and robotics that you're especially enthusiastic about at this point in time?
I would say it's right now, it's the large language models that I'm most enthusiastic about, and trying to use them in different applications. Like in the museum, we use it for a robot explaining about the objects at the museum and answering questions from the visitors. And also the robot can move around. So there we also use it for the robot. The large language model gives the robot instructions how to move, like what is the next viewpoint, or where should we go, where is the next interest point. And also we use large language models to change the face of the robot. So the robot has a screen, but the large language model outputs like emojis that we use to draw in the face if the robot should be happy, sad, angry. And then we give the robot more life, and it's more natural, instead of me trying to specify the different emotions beforehand. Then it's more rule-based and more boring to watch. So using these large language models, we can, it's not only about writing text, it's also about a lot of different applications where you can use it. So that's what's amaze me most in this time. But it's so many different algorithms. It's also a 3D generation algorithm. Then you can have like Stable Diffusion, but instead of using a 2D painting or image, you can get a 3D model, and I'm using that in virtual reality environments to be able to interact. And also I can use my voice and having a voice recognition algorithm. So I say, I want a Ferrari, and then I get the Ferrari in three dimensions that I can hold in my hands. So a lot of different generative AI is very amazing right now.
Yeah. So for the average person that has heard of ChatGPT AI, but maybe not played so much with it, what recommendations would
it's so easy to get started. It's harder to master, but you can just go to chat at .openai.org or com and start creating your account and start playing around with it. And also there are a lot of materials online and different talks. And you have even some books about how to design your prompts. But I think to just get started, think about it as a friend, like a colleague. You can talk and ask questions. If I'm thinking about what IDs should I write in this email, or how I search for one word, it might be hard to Google. I know this is a concept about this and that, but how to formulate the question for Google can be really hard. I have one concrete example. I was thinking about when you use different wood and you cut out different parts in the wood and you fasten it together to make patterns. I was asking Google, and I thought it was starting with the letter T as well, and how to write that in a Google search. It starts with the letter T. But then I asked ChatGPT, and it directly said that it's intarsia. And intarsia, it was the word I was searching for, and it wasn't even starting on the letter T, but it's a clear T in the middle of the word. So it's helping out, figuring out these questions that you normally ask a friend or a colleague. Yeah. And I was also thinking about what my father is soon going to be 60. And I was asking ChatGPT for example of presents, or what can I give my father? And I explained a bit about him as well. And I get a list, 10 different suggestions on presents there. So it's not only in the professional life you can use it, it's also private.
Yeah, one of my close friends, I'm sorry, Christopher, if you're listening to this, but he has a website called presenttips.se, which is a generator when you go in and you write like what should my wife is turning 40, what should I buy for her? And it generates examples. But ChatGPT, I think, already does it better than the website. Yeah. I'm sorry, Christopher. For me, my mind is blown every day with this tool. There's this Somebody Feed Phil. Have you seen this? It's a show on Netflix. It's a travel show. He travels around to different cities and try restaurants. So I just put the prompt what restaurants did Phil visit when he was in the episode in Copenhagen? Mm-hmm. And it's he visited these six restaurants in Copenhagen. And we're going to Copenhagen, write the travel itinerary for 4 days based on these restaurants. And it's here's what you should do. And it's there's so many different applications. So it's like you say, play with it and see what happens. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And treat it as a friend or a colleague.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So I have a new question. I used to end with a specific question, but now I have a new question to end the show with. And that is, the world is changing really fast. It's going so fast that it's difficult to keep up. So what do you think someone needs to do to future-proof himself? And so future-proof,
I understand. Yeah. I think, we already talked about it, but educate yourself and start working together with the AI instead of against it or without it. If you should be able to succeed on the labor market in the future, you need to work together with AI, and you will improve yourself. You will learn more about yourself, and you will learn more about the society using the AI. and having it as an assistant. So in the 70s, many managers had assistant helping out doing everyday tasks. Today, we can use the AI as an assistant. Yeah. And it's so much better than using Siri or using Google Home or whatever we have had in the past. This is a really clever assistant. But don't trust everything it says, because sometimes it's hallucinating and sometimes it's lying. Mm-hmm. But be curious. I think it's a very important skill set to be open-minded, ask questions, and I think you will succeed in the future.
Thank you so much for that, Fredrik. And I'm going to put some links to... Do you still give keynotes or are you
busy
with your... Yeah,
yes.
So I'll put a link to that. Fredrik do talks about these things. And yeah, it was really fun talking to you. And we could talk more, but maybe do some other time because we didn't cover virtual reality, self-driving cars, all these other things. But so many things are happening. And ChatGPT is, I think, the hottest thing at the moment. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow, interesting stuff, huh? So as we discussed, sign up to OpenAI and start using ChatGPT. Play with it, see it as a friend and as a collaborator, and work together with ChatGPT to create content and make the world better. Also, as discussed, my new book that can be found on Amazon and use the link in the show note. As always, subscribe to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Share this episode with a friend or two that needs to hear this. And also, if you appreciate the episode, I would be happy if you shared it on social media because I think this is an important topic. Fredrik Löfgren, he is also available for keynotes, so you can find more on his website that I put in the link on the show notes to this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast with your host, Oscar Ndermo. We'll catch you next time.